Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Disc Golf Answer Man. I am Bobby Cool, Daddy Slick Breeze. And on this episode, I have a conversation with Scott and Amanda from Flight Towel. You may remember from a previous episode where I had a conversation with Jesse from Trash Panda Disc Golf. They had mentioned Flight Towel, someone that I needed to meet and someone I needed to talk to. So I reached out to them and they were excited to be on the show. I wanted to learn a little bit more about Flight Towel, what is the Flight Towel all about, and also about his business and what he does as far as running his business and where he's gone from the beginning to where he is now. So let's take a listen. Well, hello, Amanda and Scott. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Doing great.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys coming on the show. I've heard of Flight Towel. I've actually held a Flight Towel in my hand, but I've never actually talked to you guys to find out about your business. And so that's one of the things I want to do with the Disc Golf Answerman podcast, learn more about businesses that are out there that are in the disc golf world. So I appreciate you coming on the show. And so we can just jump right into it, really. It's like, when and where did you come up with the concept of Flight Towel?
Well, for me, I got into disc golf from ball golf. I have some major back issues and I really enjoyed playing ball golf, but at some point it was just too much on my back. That rotation, I couldn't handle it. So my brother-in-law was like, hey, come play disc golf with me. Never even heard of it. So gave it a shot and I really loved everything about it. You know, after I got those first few throws in, you actually see the flight pattern of a disc and how it's supposed to fly, you know, pretty much hooked me right there. But the thing I was missing and the thing that I always had to do in ball golf was warm up. You know, you can do this practice swings in ball golf. So I needed something to mimic that in disc golf. And that's where I came up with the Flight Towel product. I looked up the towel routine, kind of started doing that, but it didn't feel right to me because it wasn't a disc in the hand. And it'd be like warming up in ball golf with just a stick instead of your club. You know, it just wasn't right.
Yeah.
And so that's where I came up with putting the fob, which is just a cut up piece of a disc, onto a towel and then sewing that little pocket into the bottom so it catches some resistance as you pull it across and warm up. So it's not just open on the arm, it's actually pulling back a little bit.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, we had just kind of fallen in love with disc golf and we went to our big BSF.
Beaver State Fling
in Oregon up at Milo. And it was, you know, we just loved being a part of the disc golf industry. And we're like, okay, we got to do something. We got to be here next year. We got to have our own product. And so it was all kind of happened in the same timeline. And he had like this little tiny section that he was working out in our shop, you know, like making the first couple of flight towels.
Yeah, I think I had like a 6 foot by 8 foot. area out in the garage, and I'm trying to use the limited tools I had at that point in that small little space, you know, to make the first prototype and stuff.
Yeah. But, and then, you know, he used it. I wanted one. Our friends wanted one. I'm like, we just have to do this. We got to start making these and selling them.
So how did you talk me through the whole prototype stage? Like, how did you figure out how much of a disc that you would need and that whole process?
I just kind of looked at my hand and figured it's kind of an average size hand. So I just wanted to grip the disc. And my first disc golf disc was a Franklin disc. And so that one was the one that got cut up because after I threw an Innova disc, I no longer threw the Franklin disc. So that's the one that sacrificed itself for the first ever flight towel. But yeah, I put my hand on it and just kind of traced it out. And I came up with a little jig to be able to cut it out on a router instead of a bandsaw because I value my finger. And so that made it repeatable, coming up with a jig to be able to cut it out. And I figured out I could get 4 per disc. And that's how
so
the fob came
did you have experience? Did you already have experience working with machinery like this?
I've worked with tools all my life. My dad had always had a workshop and he was really big into woodworking and just making these cool little items that, you know, they're just one-offs, but they were just for him to either hang a tool up or, you know, to improve on a tool and stuff like that. So I'd always been around that for my entire life. So when the product didn't exist, there was no doubt in my mind that I could come up with something that would work for me. You know?
Yeah, he just made it. Like, let's figure it out.
That's awesome. Now, okay, so you've used your hand. You figure out kind of how much you need of a disc. Was the first one you made, was it like, this is it? Or how many iterations did you have to go through before you said, okay, this is what I'm going to use from now on?
There was pretty much just two iterations. The first one was with a rectangular towel, so that had to change to a square towel to have everything even as you're pulling through. And the first one, I didn't have the exact shape of the top of the fob done. It was a little bit weird looking. But version number two, which came probably a week later after, you know, testing the first one out there on the course a few times, version number two stuck.
And I think, you know, modification on support, the support piece that he uses now.
That came in version two as well. Yeah. If you notice, you got the ones that we had sent, right?
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. I got them right here.
So that little plastic support piece, that was pretty big, because if that doesn't go in on that fob there, you probably get like a month out of it and it's just going to rip out of the plastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Came into version two as well.
And then at one point you asked me, and we're kind of jumping around here, but it just popped in my head. But when I asked you to be on the show and you said you're going to send this to me, you asked me what I like to throw. And I'm assuming that as you started making this, that became very important because people like, I mean, we all know as disc golfers, different discs feel different in our hand. And so was that something you discovered down the road, that people are going to be particular about which disc they use? Or is that something you thought, you know what, I bet you people are going to want different discs?
Well, yeah.
It was pretty much right away. Yeah. You know, we had the product. I put the website together myself right off the bat. And then the first thing is, do you have it in a Destroyer? Do you have it in a T-Bird? Do you have it in a Sheriff? You know, and so that right away, I'm like, oh man, I'm going to have to get a lot of discs to be cutting up.
Yeah. Well, and it's because it's not just about warming up your arm. It's also about getting the feel of the disc that you typically like to throw off the tee pad. Yeah. So, you know, it's getting that grip used to it. It's letting it pull out of your hand, you know, having the feel of your most favorite disc on the tee pad at the same time. It just helps mimic the whole warm up routine. So you're really ready when you go grab that same disc. And some people just love the colors. And some people, you know, really go for the mold of the disc.
Yeah.
If you haven't had a chance to try out Class Discs and you're looking for a deal, maybe a discount to try out some discs, make sure you check out ClassDiscFactory.com. This is a store I've set up. They're sending me misprints from Finland and I'm putting these online at ClassDiscFactory.com. And that way you can try out some Class Discs at a great deal. Or if you already have fallen in love with the plastic and the feel from Class Discs, you can get your hands on a few more of your favorite molds. So make sure you check that out at ClassDiscFactory.com. All right, so you decided you want to be part of the disc golf and the disc golf industry. You've got this product in your mind that you can make. What were some of the challenges, though, starting out a business from scratch?
The biggest one is I wanted to do it debt-free. And so that's pretty hard to do.
You really have to start small and slowly grow and be okay with growing at a smaller rate or, you know, adjusting as you get bigger instead of having like this huge lump sum and just like shoving it towards this new product and everything. So it's
that may or may not work.
Right.
It may not be popular. So it may not sell.
It's really, you know, a bootstrapping type strategy. And so that can be a little challenging when you have to just incrementally grow, but it was also very, integral to, I think, our success.
Yeah,
it was definitely worth it. I started off here in Oregon. We have a can deposit. And so I took cans back and started it with $50. Because I don't want to take any money out of the household income, you know? Yeah. Like, this had to be the side project. And so I got started with $50.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. That's very impressive. Because, yeah, a lot of people will tend to just get the credit cards or the business loan and just jump right into it before they have a proven product. So I think that was a great approach for sure. So how did you go? Once you got the product going, how did you go about finding your first customers?
It wasn't hard. our friends were like, I want one, you know, because we had disc golfer friends.
Yeah, friends and family. And then, you know, we were kind of starting out in disc golf and our personal disc golf as well. Yeah. You know, so we're starting out in that. So we're starting to hit tournaments and we got into met some really cool tournament directors. Yeah. They're like, yeah, I'd love to put one of those in my players' pack.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, how many do you need? We need 72. I'm like, there's no way we can make 72 of these.
Because they're all handmade.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all made by hand. I'm like, wait, I got this 6x8 little area I'm working out of here. You want to? But yeah, that's kind of how it started. And then just word of mouth locally. And
our team.
Our team, yeah. I mean, as soon as you make a disc golf product, you're going to have people that want to be on your team.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's just going to happen. And so we
started growing our team locally.
Yep.
And then we started opening our team up each year to go more and more further out. And so really, you know, the help of them too, featuring our products and being out on the course and talking to other people really helped us with kind of grassroots marketing. And then we slowly kind of tapped into some social media marketing.
Okay. Now, when you did, now you said, you mentioned that you had the people come up and say, hey, we want 70 some odd, you know, for our players package. How did you tackle that? Did you have to turn people away, or did you have to just bear down and start producing all of them?
Just get it done.
You're like, okay, we'll do that. Yeah. And then we figure it out, you know?
I mean, we still do that. We'll have somebody that I just heard Amanda talking to somebody that wants an order like in half the time days. It would usually take us. And we're like, let's just try to figure out how to get it done. So yeah, any of those big orders, you know, those huge hurdles, you just buckle down, you put the work in and you get it done and it works out.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, what are some of the, as early on or even now, what are some of the biggest mistakes have you made, but then learned from?
I would say some of the mistakes we made on the manufacturing side is subcontracting work out.
Okay.
We brought in all of our screen printing in-house. We bought all of our own equipment. And it's not because we didn't have a good relationship with our existing screen printer.
Right.
But they have other customers. And we needed to be somebody's top priority. So we figured, hey, let's buy all this equipment. Let's do it ourselves. We're always going to be our top priority. So we can do those rush jobs and things like that.
Yeah, we did this.
Improve our customer service.
Yeah, we did the same thing with our vinyl. We brought vinyl printing in, which is a much smaller part of what we do. But it at least gives us the opportunity to have access to that and do it as we need it. So I think that made a big difference for us.
Yeah, so I'd say one thing is, it's always nice to start out and let somebody else do part of your project, but as soon as you can, try to take control of that and bring it in-house.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to save you so many headaches.
Money, headaches, all of those things. Yeah.
Nice. For sure. That's interesting. So you outsource some stuff and then the demand got higher, you felt you brought it in-house. But what I would assume maybe that would bring a whole nother set of challenges of having that machinery in-house and then maybe learning how that stuff worked. How did you work through that? Was it just one of those, just got to get in YouTube and learn it?
Basically, yeah. So there are two of us here, but there are three other people and three other owners in FlightTal.
Oh, okay.
And one of our owners, Scott West, said, I'll do the screen printing. So we took his garage, turned it into a shop, and then he's like, I'm just going to learn it. I'm like, cool. Do it. And he did, you know, it was definitely a learning curve. So, you know, screen printing isn't easy. You can't just walk in there and like, screen print these towels.
Yeah.
Got it.
And, you know, he's trying to get help from people. He's like, I'm screen printing on microfiber towels. And like, I've never done that. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. So it was all new.
Yeah. It was all new to him, but he just stuck with it and a lot of late nights for him, but he got it down and it's definitely worth it now. Yeah. But that's just kind of what we do with everything. We figure it out on the fly and we just make it work.
That's what entrepreneurs
do.
You
gotta have some grit.
No, I love it. I love it. Now, as you mentioned, you know, as an entrepreneur and as you're building this business and all these different facets come in, how do you stay motivated to keep going and keep doing this?
I love the work. I love being in disc golf. I mean, I absolutely love playing disc golf. My back doesn't allow me to do that as much as I would like. Yeah. So by working in FlightTal and just being in the disc golf industry every single day, it it just makes it awesome. That just keeps me motivated all the time. I get to do what I love. You know, I'm in the industry that I love.
Yeah. And on top of that, for me, being in the industry of disc golf is fantastic. You know, I do a lot of the sales and the sponsorship aspects. So our sponsorship team and doing wholesale and tournament sales. And so I enjoy talking with other entrepreneurs because I've always been very entrepreneurial myself, having my own coaching business for 10 years, transitioning into this. I'm a little bit of a rebellious spirit. I like to make things happen. I like to do it now. And that kind of personality is much more geared towards having your own business because it gives me a lot of variety in what I'm doing and the ability to have freedom in your own business. It may be a lot of work, but it's still, you still have the access to switch and change and shift around as needed. And for me, that's what I love about having our own business, but also getting to work with my husband is pretty amazing too.
No, I think that's cool.
So yeah, it's just a great win-win because we work really well together, and getting to share our business together is pretty amazing.
Now, does that ever, even though it's great, it's great to be able to work with your partner, but does that ever present its own set of challenges as well? Mixing the personal and business life together, or are you able to separate that pretty well?
I think it's all mixed together anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we work at home, we play disc golf together. We've been married for 23 plus years. So it's, we've been through it for long enough that it doesn't really, there's not really much of a separation. You know, we'll be making dinner, talking about business. I'm like, oh, okay.
And when you're working with somebody and we both work in Flytel, both live in the same house.
Both visioning.
You got to work it out where you got to realize who's good at what too, because everything is pretty much work in life, you know, whether it's Flytel or sweeping the floors or doing the dishes or whatever. Yeah. So you just got to find like what you're good at and not feel guilty if, you know, maybe Amanda is working on something in the house during the morning and I'm out here doing Flytel stuff or vice versa. You know, everything's just broken up into chores and who's good at what.
Yeah. Everything's work, you know,
yeah,
just bringing it all together and balancing as much as possible. But yeah, I think we've been lucky enough to not really have any issues separating that. I mean, sometimes we'll be up really late talking and we're like, okay, we're done talking about business. We have to like tell ourselves that sometimes, you know, but
it's really fun for both of us.
Yeah.
We really enjoy doing it. So,
and we enjoy talking about,
often it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that kind of comes to the saying that if you find something you love doing, it never really feels like work, except for when you're like working your butt off, it does. But it's still, you know, at least you get to enjoy what you're doing and you have this beautiful buy-in, you know, when it's your own company.
Now, where are you at right now as far as sales, and I don't necessarily need to know numbers or anything like that, but like walk me through a timeline of going from just your first few sales to where you're at now. What's going on with the company?
Gosh, I remember when we had like our first $1,000 day. Like, oh my gosh, it could never be better than this.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And then this year we're in GBO.
Yeah, and we're, the glass phone open. Oh, we're that's going awesome. Over to Europe, you know.
The first sales, those are always kind of scary because the sale happens, then you usually make the product at that point because you always feel like you're behind. But the biggest thing was just scaling it and kind of keep it. And that's the thing too. If you can only grow it by rolling money back into the company, it grows a lot slower. So you can kind of prepare yourself for that growth instead of just pouring a bunch of gas on it and
hoping that you're going the
right
route.
So going slowly allowed us, like we started here, my little area, I was just working on it. Amanda had a full-time job outside the home. And then she started coming on it, you know, kind of part-time. And then we got Scott West involved.
Grant.
And Grant Nixon and Candace Sharp. And what we ended up doing is, like, this used to be our garage, and we turned it into a shop.
Yeah.
You know, you can't pull a car in here. The garage door on the front is decorative because walls have been built, things like that. And so turned this into my shop.
Yep.
We did the same thing for Grant and Candace. Grant Nixon and Candace Sharp, they do our sewing, they do all of our towels. And so we built a shop at their house. And so they get to work from home too, which is awesome because they just had a little baby. So
that's awesome.
They get to be stay at home, mom and dad, and work and all that. And the same thing with Scott West. He was already a stay at home dad, and he wanted something to be a part of and to work on. So we're like, yeah, let's do the screen print in your place. So yeah, we have three shops kind of spread out over probably 30 miles.
So how many total do you have in the Flight Towel Company, I guess?
There's just five of us.
There's five of you, and all of you are working other jobs, or this is the full, how many is this is the full time?
This is full time for all of us now.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
so spectacular. So we just grew it slowly over the 5 years. We grew it slowly to the point that we could all just bail on our other jobs and just move into Flight Towel. And
That worked out great.
Yeah.
That was a big moment for us to be able to like sustainably support, you know, three full families, to be able to do it full time. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. As you're talking about progression.
I think that's amazing. So tell me what are some of this, I don't know if you can narrow it down to like one or two or three step or three points, but what do you think made this a success or is making this successful?
I think courage is a really big one.
Yeah.
You know, being willing to continue to step into the most uncomfortable parts of business that you maybe don't know and trying to figure it out and just having that tenacity to continue moving through that uncomfortable feeling that you get because there's always something new coming. That's one of the biggest things I think is really relatable for success in business is just having the courage to continue to do the work. It's easy to talk about it. It's easy to tell people about your vision and all that, but to do the work is not always easy, especially when it's uncomfortable and it's something you're learning and you have to grind through that uncomfortable position.
And that's the biggest thing for me is the drive. You know, there's nobody telling me that I need to come out here and make 100 flight towel fobs
in one day.
That's on me. You know, you have to have that drive to want to do it, to want to make it successful.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about those uncomfortable moments. What were some moments that were uncomfortable?
For me, learning QuickBooks online was lots of tears for that. I mean, it was like so challenging, like those things that you just don't want to do, but they are a part of business. That was for me personally, is something like that would be QuickBooks online. You know, we're just always getting questions and new partnerships that are coming up. And so that's, you know, when you haven't done those things, it can be a little scary, you know, like, well, what do we do? What do we say? How do we want to move forward? And so being able to open up those conversations and be okay with that, I think, can be really uncomfortable too, you know, and having to come up with new policies or a new direction as a company, which way you want to go, what do you want to say? You know, I think that can be uncomfortable. How about you?
I don't know. I don't get very uncomfortable.
Well, lucky you.
You're very confident.
Lucky you.
I am. I think, I guess so. I think I'm just missing that part.
I carry enough for both of us.
There we go.
Well, I can totally relate to you on the learning stuff as far as QuickBooks stuff. I just finished, a couple of days ago with all my taxes because last year was my first year of not being employed, of just, you know, having clients for social media. And it was my first full year of submitting my taxes as self-employed, and I tell you what, even I miss the days where I just hand the tax guy my forms and let him do everything. Trying to figure it all out by myself was definitely it was frustrating, but I finally got it taken care of. But it seems like you were mentioning how you weren't sure how to answer this, you weren't sure how to say things or do this or move. It kind of goes along with what Jesse mentioned in his interview was you don't know what you don't know, but it sounds like it's just one of those things you got to figure it out. And you got to fail, yep. or you got to and shift and move if it didn't work, and try to figure it out on your own. Is even though you've had this success, you've got five people working full time. I'm assuming you're still learning new stuff every day, right?
Every day.
Yeah, that's the fun part.
It is. It's fun, exciting, scary, all at the same time. Excitable, exciting. Yeah. Every day, there's something new that comes through. I would say pretty much every day.
It is. Like we, Amanda had just recently signed a deal with the Disc Golf Pro Tour for us to advertise on the Elite Series.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Events. So big. Yeah. And that was really big. And they're like, yeah, we just need your 30-second commercial.
Okay.
I'm like, what?
Sure.
What do you mean?
Of course.
Seconds?
We'll send that right away. Give us a week or so, you know.
I've never made a commercial before. So, but instantly I'm like, all right, how do I get this done? Let's just do it. Tell them yes.
That's fantastic.
Get it done. So, yeah, in the last month I've had to learn how to cut and edit and put together a commercial and sync it up with the audio.
Yep.
And learn that you can't just use audio. You have to buy
audio. Yeah.
You have to pay.
Licenses in check and have your model releases in there.
Model
all
releases.
You know?
That was new. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a challenge. And anytime I'm hit with a challenge like that, I don't know, that just lights me up. I get going, and that's where I absolutely love it, is just learning something new, something that I haven't done before. Yeah.
Because once you do that, you gain the confidence to move into the next thing, you know? So the more uncomfortable we are, the more we have to learn and grow and be okay with things shifting and moving and adjusting, the easier it becomes. But it's definitely not easy in the beginning for most of us.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. So let me ask some questions about specifically about the tech behind the towels, because I didn't know, or I hadn't paid attention about the pocket in there for resistance. What was that again? Was that something else that you had to learn as you went, or you automatically were like, I need something to create some sort of resistance as you're practicing your form?
That came in between version one and version two.
Okay.
I had to have some resistance because I was using it. It felt like I was going to pull my shoulder out when I was really giving it a good pull across my chest to try to, you know, hit that pocket.
Yeah.
And so that came in pretty quickly. I had to have resistance. We've talked to a lot of physical therapists that are having their disc golfers, their patients, use our product, you know, because of that resistance, because it's not just empty weight coming through real quick like that. It actually pulls back.
Yeah.
So yeah, that pocket. And then to create the pocket, Amanda had a sewing machine that I had never used before in my life, so I just put it down on the table and I'm like, all right, time to learn how to sew.
Show me how. Okay, and here's then, the basics.
Yep, she showed me some basics. I'm like, all right, and then just learned it. And
that's awesome. And then the next one we have has the little carabiner on it. What was the inspiration behind putting that together?
Okay, yeah, the Flight Towel Junior. So here in Oregon, you have to have a towel to play a disc golf round. It's mandatory, right? And so I started out, I mean, I have a cart now, but I started out with a nice bag when I was playing. And I would always hang my towel from my bag, and it's hanging like this. And that's a lot.
That's
right?
What you find.
And so by the end of my round, my towel is disgusting. The bottom of my bag's disgusting. And so is my back, because I would throw it up on every time. And then, you know, just gets mud all over me. So I'm like, so I hit online, you know, I'm looking online, why is there not a towel that's hung from the center and there wasn't anything out there? And so that's where we came up with the Flight Towel Junior.
Yeah. And we also wanted to be able to use all of our products as much as possible. So we actually, the centers of our minis and our juniors are actually cut out of the flight plate of all of our discs that we use. And our discs are, you know, seconds and thirds. For manufacturers, usually overweight, that couldn't be used any other way. So,
so
it all worked out really well.
That's what we're cutting those washers out, because that's what's left over.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. I mean, just to me. And when I was before the interview, I was looking at your website and I learned about this and the reason why you put it in the middle. And I thought, genius, because there are times where I look down at, I would have my towel, like you said, normally they put it, they put the little hole in the corner, and my towel mm-hmm. would be dragging, and the bottom of my towel would be have grass all over it and dirt all over it, because yes, it just, that's the first thing, one of the first things, just sits down on the ground when you put your bag down. So I thought that was brilliant. And then of course using the leftover disc plastic to create those to hold on to it, the washer, I think is fantastic. Okay, so then the other one, the I think this is this called the mini, or
mini.
What's the thought behind the mini?
So there's a lot of players, if you'll notice, either if it's raining, they go up to the tee pad, they're covering their disc, you know, keep it dry, they like to have the towel in their offhand, and you'll see them throw it on the floor on the ground, and so really
just like that.
You can just cinch this to your wrist. And then you don't have to throw it on the ground, or you can, it's a little bit, I mean, it's the same size as our original. It's the 16 by 16 about. They're also really helpful to kind of put in your pocket to keep your hand dry. And so we're kind of like looking for other typical uses of a towel, you know, like when we're out there, like how do we want to use this?
Yeah.
And it also has about the same distance for
as
the junior, so you can hang it on your bag, even a trooper bag, and it's not going to a smaller trooper bag, and it's not going to drag on the ground either. So,
and then for me on this one, it's I don't like going up to the tee pad like this, and we're in Oregon, you know, and I get really tired of that, and so I'm just standing there like this the whole time, and it's right over it, and it's got my dry spot, and then I just slip my hand in there, and I can drive.
That's fantastic.
That's the thought behind that mini.
And then, so this is a, so your towel is a little different because I can see it's got the little, the, I guess that's the microfiber, or what is the purpose of the little squares, how it's kind of like got some texture to it? So
it's a waffle weave microfiber towel.
There's the word waffle weave, yep.
Yeah, it holds 7 times its weight in water, but the thing with those little waffle weaves in there is it's meant for cleaning glass. That's the one we had found, because we went through a lot of towels too, you know, not just when we were coming up with a fly towel, just as disc golfers when we were starting out, you know, we tried a lot of towels that didn't work.
Yeah.
And so we came across these that were actually meant for cleaning glass. I'm like, man, that works so good on the plastic. It just leaves no water, no moisture on there at all.
Even when it's a little bit wet, you can wring it out and still wipe your disc, and it will clean it and dry it.
And so it was just the best towel we could possibly find. Yeah. And that's what we started with.
And then I've noticed on your website also you offer programs where people can actually have their own graphics or put their own sayings on the towel. What was that something that someone brought up or an idea that you guys came up on your own?
Well, first tournament.
Yeah, the first tournament that we had, they wanted to have their own logo on there. So we're like, okay, let's make it happen. So we do custom logos for tournaments. We have a minimum 20 item order, and it gets them a good discount. It's about a 30% discount with those. And that way they have a good value product in their player packs and at a more of a wholesale rate. So we started doing custom images for tournaments, and then also for our wholesalers that want to kind of build their own brand in their stores. They can have a great product, but also have their logo on it, so their local community can support their brand as well. And then we just added embroidery for our individual website sales.
Yeah, for those one-offs trailer. That want to really personalize their flight towel. We have the embroidery. We bought a machine, and we have that going now too.
That's cool. And then I saw you have some teams that you sponsor some people. And then I even saw you had Trash Panda and Robbie C with their brands on there. That's a pretty cool little partnership. That's fantastic. I love the towels for sure. And these are like what they would call, like similar to what they call, like someone says, you got to get a golf towel. I'm assuming this is similar to what like a ball golf towel guy has, or a little bit different.
When I was playing ball golf, it would be this size. It's that 16 by 24.
Okay.
That's our junior.
And you know, and they all had the grommet right here, but I didn't care because I was hanging it off a cart.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's ball interesting. Different,
but yeah, this is a disc golf towel, so that's the difference because.
made for disc golfers by disc golfers. Yes,
by disc. No, disc that's what I was. Well, I just remember. I was looking at somebody's tower. They said, "Yeah, we finally put them on this golf towel material," and I didn't know what that he meant by the golf towel material. But it seems like that with this waffle you mentioned it would work much better on plastic on the disc. So that's great. All right. Well, that's great. I love learning about the products, and that's awesome. And like I said, I sent to you earlier before with all my guests, I like to ask them 5 questions to get to know you guys a little bit more. And if you guys are ready, we can jump right into those.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. So, and both, I want answers from the two of you. If they're separate answers, that's perfectly fine. So, but tell me, what are you guys learning right now?
For me, I'm learning more about marketing partnerships and what those look like, especially with bigger promotions, like with the Disc Golf Pro Tour. I'm learning kind of the ins and outs of international selling, how that impedes or helps our company. Always learning how to be okay with being uncomfortable and continuing to learn.
What was the biggest thing with working internationally? Was there any surprises or things you didn't expect?
I'm still kind of in that process, so we'll see. I don't know. Yeah. The biggest thing so far was just a matter of, kind of figuring out where our bottom line is and how to still be able to offer our products at a rate that we can that will help wholesalers internationally, but also allow us to stay good as a business.
Yeah, it's hard because we do make all these products by hand. We don't have machines just cranking these out. And so it makes it a little more difficult, you know, when you're trying to do pricing for a distributor.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess a big part of that was learning and developing a distributor pricing that would work for our company and for their company. Because we also sell on Amazon too. And so, just kind of figuring that out for our company was kind of a learning curve. Also, you know, what all goes into negotiation, you know, on such a big partnership. I'd say the same thing for the Disc Golf Pro Tour. It was exhilarating, but, you know, just like, learning all the different pieces that kind of can go into that and still in the process of learning that as well, because we're still, you know, sending product to them and getting things put in. And it's just all new and learning that and being okay with it, I think.
Is there any plans to have them not handmade, but have someone manufacture them for you? No.
I think, you know, to us, that's what makes our company different, unique, and valuable. You know, we are making products handmade from the United States, and anyone that supports our company is supporting other disc golfers doing what they love and having a business in the disc golf community. So, I don't know that we would ever do that. We would probably move into hiring people before we'd ever have manufacturing just automated.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. What are you learning, Scott?
Let's see. What I'm working on right now and learning is how to be more efficient with what we use from the disc. And I know we're already pretty efficient because we take discs that usually can't even be thrown on the disc golf course legally because they're overweight or defective, warped, things like that, warped. But, you know, we use the fobs, we use the centerpiece, and I send any of those scraps back to Jesse. But I was generating a lot of waste from just cutting the disc itself because it's a quarter-inch router bit that I use. So that's quite a bit when you're cutting up hundreds and thousands and thousands of discs at this point. So I've created a pretty good system to collect all of that and collect it so it's clean, so Jesse over at Trash Panda can actually recycle that for us too. So I'm really working on using 100% of that disc and making sure nothing goes to waste. And so I've just been learning some new processes on how to collect all of that off of our machinery. but
I never thought about it, but that makes perfectly sense. The partnership between you and Jesse, how you would have give him your waste and it becomes his material to create his discs. That's amazing.
Yep.
And that's something I should have asked earlier, but how, so I apologize for jumping back a little bit, but sourcing your discs, you mentioned you use a lot of overweight discs. Did you reach out to manufacturers and say, hey, you guys have a bunch of discs you're sitting on that I could use? How was that process?
In the start, yeah, I started reaching out to manufacturers and they're like, hey, I'm Scott with Flytel. I cut up your discs for our products.
And can you sell them to us?
If they would respond, they were like, what are you talking about? You know? But yeah, so in the start, we were hitting them up. And at this point, we have manufacturers that contact us quite often with lots that can't be used. Because, I mean, it puts them in a hard place too. You know, if they're a manufacturer that has all these discs and they get warped because they were improperly stacked or they happen to be overweight, you know, what are they going to do with them? They can regrind them, but that's a process. You know, you got to dry that plastic back out. That's kind of a big deal. It's a lot easier to just make some money off them still and then just pitch them off to us. And so, yeah, we got some really good relationships.
Yeah.
Good. We get a lot of our discs.
Good.
And we save a lot of discs from landfills and getting reground and all that. They still get to live a life in disc golf.
That's right. Well, and even people who want to send in their own discs can do that. And then we can cut those for those customers too. Yep. You know, so if they have like a special disc that they want to always have, they can send it in, get their own flight towel, and then they have it in their pocket, you know, with them at every round.
Yeah, that's cool. I hadn't thought of that.
We even do that too.
All right, next question. How has failure shaped your life?
Our life. Okay. I didn't know if it was like business related.
It could be any business related, personal, whatever.
I think we're kind of very similar on this, but for me, I think that failure is really just an opportunity for learning and adjusting and shifting. And so even when...
Sorry.
Even when mistakes are made, you just learn from them and you adjust so you can be successful moving forward. And we kind of talked about that a little bit. It's like...
Yeah, there is no real failure for me.
Yeah.
Sometimes things don't work out, but that just means...
Something else will.
Something else will, and you have to try it a different way, you know? Yeah. And I just... My mind works like that. I'm like, oh, well, that didn't work. Cool. Got that out of the way. That's not a failure. That was time well spent because that didn't work.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go this way at it. Yeah. You know?
No, we talk a lot about how things went really great and successes in the business. But was there ever a point in time where you guys looked at each other and thought, I'm not sure this is going to work?
I think the only time that we've had kind of like, maybe we shouldn't have done that was really goes into... you know, getting loans and stuff, you know, getting money, capital to like boost in a different direction.
Yeah.
And I think it comes back to the way we started was very incrementally, you know, rolling things back in. And then the moment we went to be like, okay, we'll go get this little bit of credit, paying that back was painful. It was like, that didn't feel good at all, you know? So I think that was the only, we're like, we're not doing that ever again.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we have the option, but we're like, oh, that just didn't feel good.
No. Yeah, that was like year 4.
Year 4.
Oh, yeah, a little bit of operating capital. Sure. That would be nice. I'm like, wait, no, I don't want to pay that back.
No, it just didn't, it didn't feel good. So I think that's really the only time we were like, maybe we won't do that again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Question number 3. Who do you know that I should know?
Well, you already know Jesse. Yeah. Trash Panda. We're like, oh, we should definitely know Jesse. I would say it. Well, I guess it depends on what.
Like, what are you looking for?
What are you looking for? Yeah.
Like, just know? Is there? And it could be anybody that, not even someone that I could reach out to, but just anybody that you're like, you should get to know this person because they've affected my life, or if they've helped me, or motivated me, or helped mentor me. Is there anybody off the top of your head that you thought, man, you should really reach out to this person and start a conversation?
I know who I want to talk
about. I don't know. Okay, you talk.
I would say one of those people for me and who I think is an extremely valuable resource for anyone wanting to build their own brand or get into YouTube videos and social media and really building a business out of marketing themselves would be Robbie C. Disc Golf. He's one of our players, and I'm just always impressed with his ability to grind through and learn and move, which of course I think is a definition of a very successful entrepreneur. And he's moved past those mistakes and has learned and grown. And so he's just such a great resource that we use for our team. We have 58 sponsored players on our team. And so for our team, it's always more of a marketing, a brand building together. And that's how I treat our team and vice versa. And so he's always just such a great, he's part of our team. He's also such a great resource because he's done the work and he continues to push himself in such a powerful way, making new partnerships and growing more that I would say he's probably one of the people I'm like, that's an awesome dude. He knows his stuff and he's learning it and he's pushing himself and it's successfully, it's showing, his success is showing because of it.
Very cool.
I'd go with Robbie C as well. Yeah. I mean, it would be Robbie C or Jesse. Absolutely love what both of them are doing.
Those are our two.
He's a great guy. I've worked with him a little bit with Clash and some other projects, and he's been on the show before. Yeah, Robbie C is a very, very good guy for sure. Okay, now next, what have you read or watched that I should read or watch? And again, it doesn't have to be like super inspirational. You know, I'm not looking for, you know, super wonderful, but anything that just like, man, more people should know about this.
I got to go with my favorite book. And it's, so it's The Art of Happiness by the Dalai Lama. And I read this, I've read this book several times and I read it a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it just changes your outlook on life a little bit. It's really powerful. It teaches you to have a lot of patience, to have a lot of compassion. And when you have those things, it makes it so easier to get through life, but it makes it easier to get through anything like growing FlightTAL as a business. I have a massive amount of patience because of things I learned so long ago from reading that book, you know, that I don't, you know, get upset at things very easily. I don't have that knee-jerk reaction. I'm like, oh no, we'll get through this. It's no problem. You know, we'll figure this out. Yeah, we haven't done it, but we're going to watch. Yeah. You know, so I think that book, and it doesn't come from like a religious aspect or anything like that, but I think that book is pretty powerful. So that would be
now, is that something you had to learn over time, or to be able to have more patience? Were you originally an impatient person and this helped you, or were you already kind of a patient person and this just kind of helped your journey to be more patient?
I would say I was an impatient person and it definitely helped me, you know.
And so it was kind of a growth thing where, I mean, I'm assuming right after you read the book, you weren't like automatically a patient person. So it was probably some growth going on there.
Yeah. It takes many years, but yeah.
Very cool.
I don't remember. I know the main title of this book and the concept of the book, but it's called Flow. And again, I don't remember the author. I was going to grab it before our interview, but I didn't have a chance. But really what I loved about this book is it talks about finding enjoyment in what you're doing, whether it's something that's really not enjoyable. And if it's something you really, because I remember I was in a position at one point and I really did not like this job and it was very depressing. And so I would read that book and it would teach me just how to be more finding the beauty in just the littlest thing, you know, allowing yourself to kind of play little success games, like how many of these can I get done in this amount of time? Ooh, you know, so it gives you a level of feeling successful, even in a tough situation or even in a tough job that you just have to do because you have to pay the bills, you know? And so it talked a lot about people in concentration camps and they have nothing to live for. So how do they make their life what it is, right? And simple things that they would do. And it was one quick little story, which I thought was really impactful. It was that they didn't have anything to write with. They don't, you know, nothing like that, but they would go around and they would start a story. Each one would add a little bit more, and then they'd have to know what that whole story was, and they'd go all the way around. And that was just one way that they created purpose and enjoyment in their life in such a hard situation. So I thought that was just a really powerful lesson to take the best out of what you have, regardless of what that looks like, and try to make it the best you possibly can. So, yeah.
Yeah, so our two books together, you'll... You're pretty well off, I guess.
I love it. No, I love it. It seems like just finding happiness, or, you know, sometimes you have to kind of like seek out that happiness, seek out that joy. I've read books where, you know, happiness isn't promised to us. You almost have to seek it out, even in no matter what your circumstances, find the silver lining. So I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last question, what have you done that I should do? What's an experience you've had that you think more people should experience?
Well, I had always wanted to invent a product and take it to market. So I'm going to say that, because it's just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, something that comes from your mind, you create it, it's a physical product, you show it to the world and people dig it and they want to buy it and support you. It is such an amazing feeling. So yeah.
No. Yeah, that's a good one. It's a really good one. For me, I think I've done a lot of personal growth, and I've spent a lot of time on that part of my life. And I think that has put me in the position of really appreciating as much as I can of my life as it is. And so I think, you know, anything that's a personal development that can help you grow, help you be happier, help you be more, you know, balanced and find a way to enjoy your life as much as you can, I think is really important. So anyone, you know, personal growth, I think it's really important. It also strengthens the mind, and it also helps with entrepreneurship, because you kind of get those things that stop you from moving forward taken care of when you work on that kind of personal growth. Helps you to not get stuck.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Thank you. So what are the plans for FlightTel? Where do you guys see yourself in the next 5-10 years?
We haven't had that discussion recently. Like, we're just in the middle of toiling and getting things done.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, it seems like every week it's something new that comes up that's exciting. So I would say in 5 years, I want to just be doing exactly what I'm doing right now. Maybe an employee or two.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm a little leery of the employee thing. I was in management for many, many years. And so to just
upper level management.
Yeah, upper level. So to just work with fellow owners is quite nice, because everybody is responsible for their own part of the business. And, you know, but yeah, I would say 5 years, we would probably have a few employees. And I mean, we grow every year.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, it's just that, it's that progression of, you know, that tightening, that stretch position that you kind of get into where it's too much work, but you need to stretch that position until you can bring someone on. And I think, yeah, if we keep the way that we are right now, probably within 5 years, we're going to need employees. We're going to need some employees. Yeah.
Well, that sounds like one of those good problems to have, though. So that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Scott and Amanda, for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And I really enjoyed learning more about the company and, of course, about you guys behind the scenes and what you guys got going on. Where can people find? Obviously, I know FlightTel.com is your website, and they can find you. I found you on Facebook, Instagram, and a little bit on YouTube. So, but what's something upcoming that people can start learning about and following your journey?
Do you have anything upcoming?
The most upcoming that we have is our European distribution that's coming up. We're going to be looking for and adding some more players, European players, for that growth.
Yeah, that's our biggest thing right now, probably, is that. And then probably Disc Golf Pro Tour.
Disc Golf Pro Tour. Yeah.
Yeah, growing that.
Growing that a little bit more too. We're also going to be at the Portland Open vending and at BSF vending. So anyone that's going to those can come up and say hi.
It's gonna be exciting.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing that commercial that you put together, that you had to scramble and put together.
I just have two.
Two? Yeah, oh, two commercials. Yeah. Yeah. So, wow. Yeah.
That's awesome. What we did for those commercials was neat too. We used our team. So I gave them all very specific settings that they had to put their cameras in on their phones, you know, so the resolution was good enough.
Yeah.
And then I had them all send them in to me, and they were incredibly large files, which I didn't really plan on. And so then it crashed my computer a bunch. And, but yeah, I was able to use our players in the ads, which is awesome too, because they're on Disc Golf Network. You know, everybody's seeing that. And then, yeah, that's pretty cool. I love being able to do that.
So we're going to be doing more of those and incorporating more of those into our promotion with the Disc Golf Pro Tour, because they're so nice. And a lot, they said, just send us whatever videos you want and we'll keep, you know, putting them through. So we'll have more of our players seem to be featured as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good for you guys. All right. Well, thanks again so much for being on the show. I appreciate it. And good luck on the future.
Thank you. Thanks
so much for having us. Yeah, it's been fun.